Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy: money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, here's Maggie Dawn.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn, and it is the 3 o'clock hour, and that means it is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm really excited to be joined by one of the country's top labor economists, Heidi Shierholz. She's president of the Economic Policy Institute. And today we're continuing our discussion about working Americans and what sort of policies working Americans should be looking for from their elected officials. And again, yesterday we talked with Pennsylvania Congresswoman Summer Lee about her groundbreaking new piece of legislation, the American Stability Act, which offers a solution for working people, both in terms of addressing stagnating wages and making our tax code more fair. So we're going to talk to Dr. Shierholz about why this kind of legislation is so important and why we need to change the way our country's laws and regulations treat working people. Welcome, Dr. Shierholz. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for making time.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Let's start with the minimum wage. We heard a lot yesterday from Representative Lee about the need to raise wages for working people, and the fact that worker productivity has basically, we've blown the lid off of it. We've been doing so well, worker productivity skyrocketing over the last 25 years, but the returns of that productivity, that increase in productivity, hasn't come back to workers in the form of increasing wages. As an economist, when we talk about the wage floor, how does that play into the health of the economy as a whole? And how does it affect people who actually make more than the minimum wage? I bet there's a lot of people listening that are like, oh, I don't make the minimum wage. What does all of this matter to me?
Yeah, those are really good questions. I think one sort of backdrop to this is one thing that we know is that employers of low-wage workers have the power to pay those workers less than what they are worth to the firm. Like, they have the power to suppress their wages. And so having that wage floor, like minimum wages, are so important because they limit the amount that the employers of low-wage workers can suppress their wages. They just help make sure that even the lowest paid workers in our economy are getting closer to their fair share of earnings. But your point, I keep talking about how the lowest paid workers, which is by definition what minimum wage workers are, but minimum wage increases also do impact people making above the minimum wage. Now, it doesn't go all the way, you know, it doesn't impact people making far, far more than the minimum wage, but it does have a spillover effect to people making somewhat above the minimum wage, because when the minimum wage goes up, employers like to maintain internal wage ladders for obvious reasons, right? So when the minimum wage goes up, when that floor goes up, it actually pushes up people above the minimum wage as well. So the impacts of the minimum wage do creep up higher than just the lowest paid workers. It will not solve the issues of wage growth for middle wage workers. So that for that we need other policies, but it is incredibly important that we have this wage floor in it, and it doesn't just affect those at the very bottom. It sort of affects workers even a little bit farther up than that.
It has a domino effect, if you will, that when we acknowledge that we actually don't pay people a minimum wage, and I hate that language, we don't pay people a sustainable wage that's even reasonable for a single person to live on. Here are some baseline facts. I've mentioned them before on the show. More than 40% of working Americans make less than the median cost of living for a single adult with no children. I want everybody to just think about what that means. more than 40% of Americans don't make enough to live as a single adult with no kids. Again, the technical terms make less than the median cost of living for a single adult with no children. So we've got half of our country, nearly half of our country, working for less than it costs to live. That's got to be a drag on our economy, on small businesses, even on our largest corporations. How would things be different if we took a different approach to wages and working people?
That is a really good question that, in my mind, kind of gets at the heart of how we think about economic growth. So if we had far fewer people who are either poor or near poor, which is kind of the way, we have a large share of people in this country who are either poor or sort of near poor, living paycheck to paycheck. If we were to reduce that amount, that share, it would be not just better for those people. Obviously, it would make a huge difference in the lives of those folks, but it would also be better for the overall economy. So the rise in inequality, inequality really did start to just take off like crazy in the 1980s. So it's been about 45 years since we've seen this rising inequality. So that rise in inequality that's kind of started with the 80s, it has actually led to overall slower economic growth in the economy. And one reason for that is that when you get a higher amount of the overall income earned in the economy going to very rich people, those are the folks who are the ones who are most likely to have the luxury not to spend it, to have the luxury to save that money, right? It's not like they desperately need it to make ends meet month to month. And so when you do that, when you get more money in the hands of people who are not necessarily going to have to go out right out and spend it, that slows demand for goods and services. It slows our overall economy. And so you can just see how that has played out in recent decades, where as economic inequality grew, that you just see that weighing on our overall economy. So it's like the idea of trickle down economics, where you get money to the people at the very top, and then they'll somehow generate economic activity that will hit the rest of us. That has been utterly debunked. Like the last decades have shown us that a more middle out approach, bottom up middle out approach, is what actually works for generating a strong economy.
Folks, this is Dr. Heidi Shierholz, president of the Economic Policy Institute, an organization that fights for legislative and regulatory reforms that help working people to improve wages and benefits and working conditions. She's the former chief economist for the Department of Labor under President Obama. Representative Lee's bill that we talked about with the representative yesterday is called the American Stability Act. And it includes this provision that, as soon as I read it, I went, well, duh. And that
is... Oh, we're having some slight technological difficulties. Maggie, I'm going to need you to reboot. That's okay. Heidi, thank you so much for joining us today. And I believe Maggie's back. Oh, no, Maggie, you're not. We're going to try that again. It's live radio. Sometimes these things happen. Oh, no, Heidi, you're not going digital too, are you?
I still hear you. You can hear me?
I can kind of hear you. Maggie, welcome back.
Thanks so much. Can you hear me okay, Dr. Shierholz?
I can hear you, Maggie, just fine. Can you hear me?
Wonderful. I can. I wanted to ask you that the Sustainability Act includes such a critical provision. Not only do we identify what is truly a sustainable wage, mm-hmm. folks that are only making what it costs for a single adult with no children to live would effectively not effectively, they would get a cost of living tax exemption, which means you're not going to be taxed if you're making just this bare minimum amount, this barely sustainable amount of wages to sustain a single adult with no children. And that tax burden would be shifted to people making more than $1 million a year, and even a slightly larger shift of that burden to people that make more than $15 million a year. Will this work?
I really like this kind of thing that highlights these two key issues. One, working people need higher wages, like that, full stop. We absolutely need that. And then we also need to, as a country, make sure that the ultra rich are paying their fair share. And so this, you know, this kind of gets at that from both angles. Those are two changes that we absolutely need to see happen to get us to the kind of economy we want. And so this is a really good step.
Yeah, that is the middle out and bottom up approach. We've talked about it so many times, Dr. Sherholtz, on this show, that capitalistic economies require a vibrant and growing middle class, that you need middle class folks with buying power. You need working people with buying power because we're the ones that buy stuff. Rich people just hold on to their money. They're not buying stuff. And when you're not buying stuff, you're not helping the economy grow, as you adroitly pointed out. We're in this incredibly politically unstable time period because it doesn't seem to be a coincidence to me that this exploding inequality is coinciding with this exploding political instability, not just here, but globally, as we've discussed here.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find more at civicmedia.us.
Do you feel like you work all the time and you might not be getting ahead? There's a reason for that. And our guest on today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires, Dr. Heidi Sherholtz, is here to help us understand exactly why. She is president of the Economic Policy Institute. Welcome back, Dr. Sherholtz. We talked about why a bit in the first segment, and that is because while workers have contributed an explosion in productivity, which has helped grow the U.S. economy, much of the benefit of that increase in productivity has gone to the richest people and to corporate shareholders. The vast majority of us do not own significant quantities of corporations. So it's going to the richest folks in the nation, and it's leaving workers behind, that there's been this decoupling of increased production and wages. But we're also seeing, since the 80s, increasing political instability. And so before we went to the break, I said, is this a coincidence? Is this highest levels of income and wealth inequality that our country has seen in 100 years? Is the place that we are now in it with all of that inequality and this increase in political instability, is it a coincidence that these are happening at the same time?
I think it is not at all a coincidence. Surprise, surprise. The policy sort of, it's a policy choice that we have the kind of inequality that we have today. Policies like allowing the minimum wage to erode, the relentless attacks on unions that have led to declining unionization, the elevated unemployment for long periods. Not right now. We have low unemployment now. Our policymakers actually did a really good job responding to the COVID recession. But for the four decades prior to that, we tolerated excess unemployment for long periods. That's really bad for working people. An eroded safety net, and kind of on and on and on. That's the set of things. That's a policy choice. Those are policies that have led to rising inequality, reduced worker power, and sort of big chunk of people being really left behind. And I think what that has meant is that people are rightly, in my mind, looking for answers. And that has created this kind of perfect storm where I think people are more likely to be willing to believe it when somebody then comes out of the blue and says, you know, these problems are all caused by immigrants or something like that. That's not true. It's caused by the list of things that I said. It creates this situation where people may be more willing to believe that instead of really thinking of the or knowing about the real villains in this story, which are the ultra wealthy and the policymakers who have supported the ultra wealthy by allowing minimum wage to erode, by allowing the attacks on unions to erode unionization, by allowing too high unemployment, by allowing the safety net to be eroded, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a mismatch of who's at fault for the problems that real people truly are experiencing, I think.
And one of the ways that I like to talk about policy choices is it is a choice amongst our values. It is an expression of our values. And if we value working people in this country, then our policies should reflect that. Lip service can be given to bootstraps and hard work. But if our tax policy and our economic policy doesn't reflect a value on work, then that is bogus. And the feeling that people have, right, I think is very real. And it has made people vulnerable. And the rich people in this country and globally are willing to prey upon that vulnerability and lie to people about the causes of their vulnerability. That when you're economically vulnerable, you become vulnerable to all sorts of suggestions because we live in this state of heightened anxiety. I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Sherholtz. You mentioned worker power, and one of the things that I hope can fight anxiety is when people feel empowered to make changes. So I want to ask you a bit about what can people do to feel empowered and engaged and inform themselves, and what should we be looking for to empower us as middle-class workers and workers nationwide?
You know, there's a lot of ways to answer that question, but I'm just going to get to the thing that I think is the most empowering sort of institution in our country for working people, and that is unions. Like, I think working people there is a resurgence of unions right now. Yes. Public support for unions is at near 50-year highs. We're seeing big high-profile union wins, high-profile successful strikes, et cetera, et cetera. But it also just is something that people can do. Joining together with your colleagues can lead to higher wages, higher benefits, safer workplaces, saner schedules. Like, that is a really important way to just take control over your own economic life.
And sort of the democratic analogy to workers organizing together is voters turning out in great numbers to say, we want policies that reflect that we value hard work, that wealth needs to be taxed like work, that there shouldn't be a capital gains tax rate that is lower than what we pay in income tax. Folks, we're going to have to leave it there, but you can always come back every day in the 3 o'clock hour for more Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Dr. Sherholtz, on a very personal level, as an economist, thank you for your service to working people in this country. And please continue to do that great work. We all appreciate it.
Will do. And right back at you. Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org and be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations.